This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to Innovation in Compliance. In this podcast series, I will bring you interviews with some of the leading experts who are changing the way practitioners approach compliance. Although the name compliance is in the title, it's really about innovation. And I wanted to drive the conversation about innovation in compliance into the 2030s and beyond, with a focus on innovations for the compliance practitioner and the compliance professional. You want to learn how to bring your business into an innovative state and more innovative business solutions for compliance problems, issues, and concerns. This is the podcast for you. Innovation in Compliance is a production of Compliance Podcast Network. Today I visit with Matt Kunkel and Nick Kathman, both from LogicGate, who is the sponsor of today's podcast. We talk about LogicGate's innovative solution to GRC and how it can help drive your compliance program forward. I know you'll enjoy it. First, a message from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network this month, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and to try our free ROI calculator. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode. I'm absolutely thrilled today because I have double trouble. Yes, I have Matt Kunkel and Nick Kathman, both from LogicGate. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Thanks for having us, Tom. Excited to be here.
For those not watching this on YouTube, we have to acknowledge Matt's U of M helmet and Go Blue on the bookshelf behind him. Another proud U of M grad, Go Blue. But before we get going, could I ask each of you all to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your professional background and current roles?
Sure. Nick, you want to go first?
Sure. Hi, I'm Nick Kathman. I'm a CISO here at LogicGate. I've been in security for over 20 years, in tech for longer than that. So before coming to LogicGate, I was running security and compliance, including our MSSP function for the what was called VirtuStream, which is the Dell, the cloud division of Dell Technologies. So we were the world's largest SAP and Epic hosting provider. So very large, very sparse, very regulated, over 72 attestations. We had multiple FedRAMP clouds, an IRAP cloud, and even a DoD ATO at one point. Prior to that, I ran really large storage clouds for C. So a lot of white labeled, a lot of the storage clouds that you know and love and use every day, white labeled us as their storage, and we ran everything for them in the back end, including one of the world's largest storage clouds. And then also before that, ran security for Verified by Visa, MasterCard, SecureCard, NXA Pass, JCB Secure, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of white label versions of those. And then even further back, I went into industrial security. So SCADA and ICS types of security with consulting back when it was still Anderson Consulting back in the days. Again, going way, way back.
Way back.
Yep.
How about you? What's your current role, Nick?
I'm the CISO here at LogicGate.
Okay. And Matt?
So my name is Matt Kunkel, Tom. I'm one of the co-founders and the CEO here at LogicGate. Prior to founding LogicGate in 2015, so it's coming up on almost 10 years, which is kind of crazy. I spent over a decade in the consulting space building custom GRC applications for large banks, large pharma, large healthcare firms. So got about 10 years of domain expertise in how do you use technology to really operationalize and automate different aspects of regulatory risk compliance and security before I ever cocked up this crazy idea of there's a better way to run GRC for these folks and how do we help them with that. Prior to that, just out of school, was a business analyst, kind of taught myself how to code, worked on some big fun investigations like the Bernie Madoff investigation. That's kind of where I cut my teeth in application development and then transitioned that over to building custom GRC applications.
Well, that really leads us directly to LogicGate. Could you expand a little bit about what market opening or market need you saw and how you were able to step in and fill that through LogicGate, Matt?
Yeah, so ultimately what LogicGate is a market-leading holistic GRC, governance, risk, and compliance platform. And I think what we saw in the consulting world was a couple things. One is that we were constantly asked to continue to build on top of technology that we had created for these firms. So for example, we built JPMorgan Chase's regulatory change management application for their mortgage, card, and consumer bank. Very soon after that, we were asked to build a policy management platform. So a platform adds so much more value to organizations than point solutions trying to be cobbled together. The second thing that we saw is that the first line of defense really enjoyed using our technology. And that's because the user interface looked like this thing, which is an iPhone. So it's got to be as easy to use as an iPhone, or else the first line of defense is not going to be able to use it. And the last thing that we saw in consulting, and probably our biggest differentiator, if you think about us as opposed to other pieces of GRC technology on the market, is this concept of a flexible data model. And if you say, well, Matt, what does that even mean from a business perspective? A flexible data model allows you to do one thing that every business is going to go through, which is change, right? If you think about it, change is the only inevitability in any big or small. And if your strategic objectives are changing, if your operating objectives are changing, largely that means over time, your risk profile is going to change. The third parties that you do businesses will change. Your regulatory landscape, your compliance landscape, your privacy landscape, all of that's going to change down the road. So you need a piece of technology that can meet you where you are today from a maturity perspective, but can also very easily change over time as your business needs changes without having to get developers or consultants like my former self involved, because we were making the lion's share of our revenue in consulting on just change orders to technology that we were managing for folks. And we can do that because we use new technology called Graph in a graph database, as opposed to a traditional a relational SQL Oracle database that most GRC platforms are built on today.
Matt, let me go back to some of the remarks you started with around the first line of defense and having employees at that line of defense utilize your solution. Would I be correct in assuming the solution has to be easy and straightforward for them to use, for them to apply it, or you find that the frontline can use a more sophisticated approach, or am I completely off the mark on both?
Well, I think it really is two ways, and we kind of look at the market in two ways, and we call it, you know, best practice, simple by default, but optionally advanced. And what we mean by that is, if you think about kind of the lower mid-market to maybe even upper mid-market, those folks are fairly resource constrained when you're thinking about compliance and security. Those folks sometimes don't know what exactly they need to put in place, and they've just been tasked with, hey, we need to stand up a risk register and do risk assessments because we need to be SOC or ISO compliant. Or, hey, we need to get into this new market, so we need to be ISO compliant. So we need to have it out of the box, ready for them, very simplistic. Again, just like an iPhone, so they're in and out. We actually track time out of application for the first time in defense, because we feel if they're in and out quickly, that means that they're having a good experience with LogicGate. On the other side of the house, you need optionally advanced, because we need, over time, they want to grow with us. And then you get to the larger enterprise size where they're like, hey, we know what we need to put in place from a security perspective, a compliance perspective, a controls perspective. And it's unique at XYZ big company here, because of our processes, our program, and what we need to put in place. Because, again, we're built on this graph database, we can support both best practice out of the box, very simple, and we can support optionally advanced, very flexible, very dynamic to meet the needs. At the end of the day, though, for the first line of defense, you always want to make it easy for them.
So what is the LogicGate Risk Cloud Exchange?
Nick, you want to take that one, or do you want me to?
Sure. So the Risk Cloud Exchange is kind of think of it almost like an application marketplace or an integration marketplace, where if as a Risk Cloud user, you can go in and actually log in and see all of the different applications, all of the different integrations, all of the different use cases that we have in place, both developed by LogicGate, but also developed by our customers as they expand on our product. So let's say you want to, today you are doing controls compliance, but you've identified a gap where you need third-party risk management. You can go into the Risk Cloud Exchange and just click and install a third-party risk management app into your environment. And first, it'll install as a draft where all the workflows, everything will be there, and you can actually start using it right out of the box. And then you can promote it to production and start using it for a full production use case. I think there's 50-something applications across the different integrations and stuff like that inside of the Risk Cloud Exchange now. And that number continues to grow by the day, by the week.
So one of the things I was most intrigued about when I did some research to prepare for this podcast was the concept of the compliance management system. And I don't want to say that's a holy grail, but the holy grail, but maybe a holy grail. Because having that integrated holistic system in place is something that companies continually struggle with, particularly in the area of multiple risks. So could I ask you, what's your vision for that, at least for LogicGate?
Yeah, I'll give you my kind of take, and then Nick, you can jump in here. I think a compliance management system consists of several different components. Some of those are technology related, like the processes and the policies and the controls, but also some of them are people related and the processes that the people have in place. And to me, it's a system to track compliance with all the different laws and the regulations and the standards, both that are internally within an organization. Something that's come up internally a lot is AI governance, right? And how will we track AI and our AI standards within our organization, and frankly, how our third parties are tracking it, and the external regulations. And then how do we create and conduct audits? How do we assess the gaps that we have, and how do we remediate any of those gaps in findings that we have where we're potentially non-compliant? And it's also one integrated system with all of the different data, right? So if you're saying, hey, if I'm thinking about just something like, what is the compliance around our IT risk? Well, I probably need vulnerabilities from a Tenable or a CrowdStrike or a Rapid7 out there. So how do I pull those in? And then how do I link those to my assets from a ServiceNow and SMDB, right? So it's the ability to integrate all of this data into one platform and then have the data talk to each other across different applications. And then ultimately, what you really want to get to is the output of it. That's what we care about. The platform just drives efficiencies, but what is that output that your chief compliance officer, chief regulatory officer, chief privacy officer, chief risk officer can ultimately show to the board and the exec team to ultimately, and this is what this is all about, Tom, is about making better strategic risk-based decisions. At the end of the day, I think still risk and compliance and security professionals, it's kind of a cost center within organizations, and really flipping the narrative in the script to say, this is about making the best companies in the world are built on strategic bets and strategic risks that they take. How do we as practitioners help the CEO and the board make those strategic bets and those strategic risks in a better manner, so that they understand what's on the other side of that top line revenue that they've got glassy eyes about?
Yeah, I think it's to add to what Matt said, in a lot of GRC or in security in general, like security being, or GRC being a major component of security, a lot of it is context and data. So we've got a lot of data, especially in all of these security tools across the board, really provide context for a specific process, but that process also provides context to other processes within GRC and security. So an example is pulling controls, like how controls are operating, is to an actual risk, because there should never be a time where there's a control without a risk associated, really lets you know, is if controls evaluations are failing, is that risk likelihood going up? Also, is there any incidents that were related to that control or to that risk? So now the incident response team, the SOC, is living and breathing inside of whatever their ticketing system is for how they're managing the incidents and what happens. And the GRC team is pulling evidence on certain cadence to figure out exactly what it is. And then they're going through a risk management process where they're looking at it saying, okay, the risk of social engineering attacks is once a quarter, or making up some type of cadence there without having the full context the SOC actually has. So there, it's in a lot of cases, it's guessing without that data to support it. And really what LogicGate does really well is it pulls all of that contextual data together into a holistic GRC approach, where you can really start to manage, I call it dynamic GRC. So now all of this data comes in and supports your GRC process, your risk management, and your risk register almost changes dynamically based on what your current risk profile is, so that you know that you're focusing on the correct risks for today and not what was correct a year ago when you last ran your risk assessment. And then really what that does is, tying it back to the business objectives, it really allows the company to understand what their risk profile is at any time and really take the risks that make that grow the business as they need it. And I like to say good security makes good security
pays for itself.
Yeah, good security pays for itself. And that's just exactly what it is. And I think a big part of this is, how do we go from, I think a lot of traditional risk organizations, traditional like CISOs, traditional legal officers, really look at risk. And as soon as they see it, the first thing that comes to their mind is, how do we mitigate it? How do we get rid of it? How does it go away completely? So it's no longer a problem, but that's not always possible. Like, you can't run a business, you can't live a life without some level of risk. So really it's flipping the switch and how do we optimize for risk? How do we know risk is going to be there. How do we now optimize for that risk that's going to be there and help align it to our strategic directives as a business?
Nick, let me pick up on something you said. Let me see if I can get this right. The dynamicism of the risk register, so that you're getting accurate reading of what your risks are today. The regulators tell us that that's what they want. They want a risk assessment, sometimes continually, but certainly not every year. So when your risks change, you should do a new risk assessment. Does this tool allow a company to really fulfill that as their risks change? The risk register demonstrates that or gives that information so that you can then implement an appropriate level of risk management strategy?
It can, yeah. So through our automated evidence collection and high volume data repositories, you can pull in all of this contextual data around those risks. And whenever the risk evaluation is updated, the risk will automatically recalculate what the residual score is, which is how you stack rank it inside of your risk register. So you can do this now today, just with the out-of-the-box integrations. And then really what it comes down to is how flexible and how fast moving or how agile is your business. So if your business, you know, if you're a really large monolithic business and it takes you a year to get buy-in and budget to move on something, performing a risk assessment every month probably isn't going to work out very well for you. But if you're a smaller company and you can move and adapt very quickly, you're agile and fast on your feet, you can do it every day as you need to. So it really is, it depends on, like, what we enable is bringing all of that contextual data in so that the risks will stack rank and move around as the risk profile changes. And then what you do is you set your cadence in terms of how frequent do you want to have this risk register actually update to understand what your risks are. And then that's what goes up to regulatory bodies and the board from there.
Let me change the focus a bit. And frankly, one of the reasons I was so excited to visit with both of you guys on the same pod is I rarely get to interview a CEO and a CISO. And I want to talk about that relationship, because certainly cyber risks have evolved, changed dramatically in many ways from outside actors. But the relationship, or at least the risk to the CISO, have changed from the regulators now. They're putting a lot more pressure on CISOs. So I wanted to ask both of you guys, what is the evolving relationship between a CISO and a CEO, given the incredibly dynamic environment that both operate in today's business world?
You want to take it first, Nick, or you want me to?
Sure. Go ahead and I'll add on to it.
Well, first of all, I think you got to think about where it's come from, which in my opinion, only a few years ago, it was extremely siloed, right? The CISO, I think, and CEO probably talked very infrequently. They rolled up to a CIO or a CTO within an organization. And then the CTO was trying to translate, hey, this is what my CISO is telling us about the risk. And at the same time, trying to translate, hey, this is what we're doing from a product perspective or a digital perspective or the other technology aspects of the organization. So a lot of it, I think, got lost. I think now, with the heightened amount of, frankly, breaches that are out there, with the heightened amount of third parties that we're using that CISOs have to verify, because if your data is not as, if you're using a third party that you're shipping over customer data and that's not secure, it's just like your own data internally not being secure. So I think that there's been over the last short period of time, that 5 years, a real transformation with the CEO and CISO's relationship, that the CISO or the CEO seeks to have more input from the CISO. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier. It's so the CEO can make better strategic bets and place better risk-based decisions. Nick said, it's about optimizing for risk. risk is never going to go away. The best companies in the world are built on risk taking. It's about how do you optimize for risk so that you can move faster and smarter in the organization. And the more that relationship is close together, the better the ability of the CISO is, or the CEO is, to make those decisions. I meet with Nick on a weekly basis, right? Nick always says to me, Matt, good, especially during budgetary season, Matt, good security pays for itself, period, end of story. And he's right. But at the end of the day, every deal that we do has a security assessment that they want to know a laundry list of questions about how we are securing customer data in the world that we play in. Every new market that we get into, you know what? They have regulatory scrutiny. They have privacy scrutiny. Nick runs those things for us. I can't get into those new markets unless he has the correct programs in place. So it truly does. Good security really does pay for itself, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it's adding on to that. It's like with things like the SEC controls or the new SEC regulations, the SEC Wells notice that won against the CFO. There's a lot of new pressure. So now there's actually criminal liability that could be passed on to the CISO itself, as well as the CFO. So it's as the regulatory bodies, not just in the US, but in the EU with DORA and others, start to really turn the screws on this, cybersecurity is becoming a board level topic, enough so that it actually has to be declared as a material incident, has to be declared in your Form 10Ks, but also in your risk profile and how you're running security has to be presented to the board on a regular basis. And there's now new security training requirements for board members. At least a certain percentage or a certain number of people on your board have to have some level of security training to understand exactly what the CISO and the people are telling them. So I think I call it the old school way, was really the CISO would start providing bubbling up risks and information. It would go through multiple people before, multiple like stakeholders before it got to the CEO, and nobody wants to deliver bad news. So even if there was bad news to deliver, it was usually watered down and it was told in a really optimistic light, when sometimes Matt can't make a good business decision if he doesn't understand what the data coming to him is. And I don't envy Matt's job. Being a CEO is making a lot of really hard decisions. But if you don't have the data to make those decisions, it's really not going to help you. I would say it's also where a lot of this dynamic is changing is the CISO's position is becoming a lot more strategic. Like as companies grow and as companies try to grow their revenue, there's only so many paths that they can take: mergers and acquisitions, organic growth, growing into expansion markets, growing into other countries. And with each one of them comes more additional risk, but also comes a lot more program controls you have to put in place. The more advanced notice that my team and the CIO and others have in to prepare for those, the better. Because now instead of being surprised by, oh, hey, we're going to be in China tomorrow, we can start building out all of the applicable practices to be able to expand into one of these markets.
Nick, would you advocate CISO direct reporting to the board, or at least visibility to the board directly, or are we not there yet?
I would advocate for it. I actually do. I meet with our board. I meet with select board members who have security experience once a quarter, and also with our board once a quarter. So I'd say, yeah, the CISO should have at least a direct line to the board, if not some dotted line relationship to the board.
Matt, how about from your perspective as a CEO? Should there be direct reporting to the board from the CEO's perspective? Are you having those discussions with the board about cyber risk and cybersecurity? And is that a part of the overall remit of a CEO, or would you advocate for that?
100%. And as Nick mentioned, that is part of our quarterly board cadence. We take time out of every one of our board meetings. Nick comes in and he presents to the entire board and the executive team on our security posture, our risk posture, when we're getting into other markets, how close we are to certifications that we need to do that, because it ties very clearly and directly to the overall strategic objectives of the organization. If you're not doing it today, I would urge CEOs and board members to ask that your CISOs be included. And it doesn't have to be like this big, huge hour-long shebang. Nick's in there for 15 minutes. He articulates where we are from a risk perspective and strategic projects perspective to our board. They ask him a couple questions and we're on to the next topic, right? But it's the visibility and the transparency. And it, to me, really what it is, what it sets at the top from a culture perspective. because giving Nick that visibility with the board and how that then trickles down to my executive team and how it then trickles down to the VPs and their one downs, it's to me saying we have a culture of risk and security and compliance at this organization. Because if I wasn't doing that, it would be very easy to say like, oh yeah, security is this one-off thing that goes to the CTO and they talk every once in a while with the CEO about it. It's action by doing it, and the visibility then that Nick has with the board sets, in my opinion, a real culture of risk and compliance that we have within our organization.
Matt, I'm so glad you brought up that cultural component. It's the simple, maybe that's not the right word, but the presentation of a CISO at the board, the presentation of the CISO literally at that executive level sends as strong a message as sometimes the actual work done by the CISOs. Kudos on the cultural recognition of that. But what are some of the, Nick, you talked about some of the challenges you saw when there was siloed nature for CISOs getting up information to CEOs. What are some of the current challenges you see? Is it having a CEO understand the risk? Is it presenting it to them in a manner that they can understand? Or is it being able to articulate the risk and the risk management strategy?
Yeah, so I think in a lot of cases, it's a mixture of a couple of different things. So one is, as you're discussing the risk to stakeholders, you have to understand what is important to them. So what's important to a chief risk officer or a chief revenue officer is pipeline and churn. So if you can take the risks and tie them to, this is going to affect our pipeline, this is going to affect our churn. If we have a major incident or a breach, we're going to churn customers, your revenue is going to go down, your pipeline is going to vanish. That's what's important to them. Whereas a chief marketing officer, you might want to talk about brand awareness and how it would tarnish your social brand if there was an incident that went public. Chief financial officer, it's a lot of loss expectancy. Here's what we can expect financially for things to happen. Here's what a material breach means to us contractually based on everything that we have here. And to the CEO, it's a lot of it is like, how is it going to affect the business in all of these different ways? So it's really a big part of it is, number one, figuring out the appropriate, how to phrase the risk appropriately to the right audience member. Number two, making sure that as you're communicating risk, the risk is at the acceptable level. And this is why I think the CISO and CEO and the ELT all need to be on the same level. I go back to an example I had in a previous position where the senior director of GRC was reporting risk up to the executive leadership team. And in all bold, bright red, all caps, like typeface 72, flashing on the PowerPoint was critical risk. And the CEO stopped her and goes, are we going to exist in 2 weeks? Like, if we're not going to exist, or to me, a critical risk is the company is going to cease to exist in 2 weeks. Let me tell you what a critical risk is. We don't have cash flow right now to pay our payroll for the next week. That is a critical risk. What you're presenting to me now doesn't even register. So it's really making sure that as I come in, the second aspect of this really is just making sure that all of our risk levels are aligned so that I can say there's critical risk because there's a vulnerability on a system. To Matt, that means nothing. And quite frankly, to me, it means nothing as well. So it's just making sure that the risk levels are also aligned. And then there was a third aspect to this.
I think the one thing that Nick does really well that I would advocate practitioners do is he ties the risk to the strategic objectives of our organization. We have clear strategic objectives within our company of where we want to go over the next 2 years and how we're going to get there. And when we talk about risks at an organization, he always ties that risk to, hey, this will affect this strategic objective in X way, whether it's negatively or whether it's we can't do this strategic objective without doing XYZ thing.
Yeah. Matt, DC has put additional pressure on companies around disclosures. How do you counsel a client or customer or a board of directors around the disclosure issue in this regulatory environment? Or is that a conversation you're having with your customer base?
Yeah, it is, especially with our larger, obviously, Fortune 500 customers. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I think you have to do it. But to me, the disclosures that are in there is kind of a byproduct. The first thing that you have to do if this happens is you have to talk to your customers, because the last thing that you want is your customers to find out that you had a breach from an SEC disclosure, right? Like that it talk about losing brand and reputation in a very quick period of time. So I think it's about if that happens within your organization, hopefully you're running tabletop exercises and you understand kind of what is the path and who needs to be involved and how do we remediate this? And then how do we communicate this to our customers? I think a lot of the saying is it's not if, it's when you have a breach. And I think most CISOs have lived through one now. And to me, it's about more of how transparent and how communicative you are within that process. And certainly not finding, having a customer not find out from an SEC disclosure is the appropriate path, in my opinion. Nick, though, what are your thoughts on it?
No, that's exactly it. I would say it expands past just the SEC, has the mandatory breach reporting and stuff like that in it too. So it goes a lot further than that. I would say a lot of it is really, it's exercising that muscle. Like Matt said, the tabletop exercises. We have tabletop exercises with the ELT on a regular basis, and we're going to hold some actually with Breach Council the next time. So making sure that even if us as an ELT who's practiced and as a technical team who's practiced and go through these tabletops, understand exactly who we're supposed to contact and when, in what time period, and have everything planned out and figured out, what are we missing and what has changed since the last time we've run this that we may not have been aware of. So a lot of it is making sure that, number one, you have this culture of transparency so that if something is happening, see something, say something, your employees are actually telling you and they don't feel that they're going to be chastised if they bring something forward, especially if it's their fault. A lot of employees will do something that they then realize is wrong that might constitute a security incident or a breach, but they don't want to bring it forward because they're afraid they're going to get penalized, terminated, et cetera. So really, you have to build that see something, say something culture of transparency. If something happens, bring it up. We can adjust to it. We can respond to it quickly. The more time that goes between when it happens and when we start responding, the worse it is. So first is building that culture, getting it in there, and then practicing that muscle on exactly how you manage the security breaches. So like you say, the primary objective in a breach is to drive the value to zero. If somebody steals your database, your database of passwords, you change all the passwords. Now what the attacker stole is worth zero. If they stole personal identities, give out the personal identity monitoring. And from there, it hasn't completely removed the value, but it's removed it a lot more because now it'll be detected if they try to use it, et cetera. So whatever that incident happens, whatever that breach is, part of your breach response should really be driving that value to zero to where it doesn't matter anymore that it happened, as well as making sure that you are informing the correct regulatory bodies, both and your customers, especially your customers, your stakeholders, your board, your cyber insurance, and then any of the regulatory bodies, both here and abroad.
Gents, I want to close by asking you to both look down the road a little bit to, dare I say, 2030 and mid-century. And what do you see as the evolution of automated compliance management solutions? And Nick, I'm going to start with you and end up with Matt.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, I really see like where I would like to see in my mind is that what we're doing with dynamic GRC, where the risk register is changing dynamically, I'd like to see where it'll actually start to dynamically change controls and control freight cadences and actually have things like AI suggest new controls to be implemented that may just automatically be enabled from there. So, you know, an example is if we are starting to see, if our vulnerability management tool is coming up and it's showing pick a metric, mean time to resolution is trending up. So now the likelihood of a vulnerability happening, or the vulnerability risk is starting to trend up, it moves up. So now what we're going to do is we're going to start, one of the controls for this is a patch management cadence that we meet once a month. We're going to change that to once a week to start to try to get a hold of this before that risk exceeds that threshold. We're going to start putting in more frequent automated evidence collection. We're going to start upping the velocity that the tooling is giving to the SOC. And we may start increasing staffing levels in the SOC to adjust automatically for exactly where these risks are rising. But really, it's where I'd like to see it, where I think it belongs is risk leads security, and then GRC helps the governance, I would say, really helps to manage to make sure that it's actually operating and it stays operational. And then compliance is kind of a go-to-market aspect inside of that. But really, it's companies switching and going from a maturity model of, well, there's a lot of companies now that compliance kind of is the tail wagging the dog. They're implementing controls because some framework says they have to, but they don't actually know that they need to, or some of them don't make sense. The example I always give is the company that only has public, the meme website, that had to get PCI compliant and went out and bought $500,000 worth of HSMs, probably wasn't the best investment they could have made. So really transitioning that into risk, leading the actual security program, because that's what we are at the end of the day, and then having that dynamically change controls and verbosity and data levels and response times and things like that automatically based on how the risks are trending and really trying to get ahead of them. So if our risk profile as a company, our risk tolerance is, let's say, a moderate, if something starts trending up towards a moderate, let's start taking action now before it actually hits moderate and it becomes a problem already. That's where I see things in 2030 and beyond.
Matt?
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what Nick said. I kind of bucketed into three things. One is, I think if you project out over the next 5 years, the involvement in the first line of defense never will go to zero, but will continue to trend down and down because technology and AI will be able to pull a lot of what we're asking the first line of defense to do with data, right? And with evidence that they can automatically pull. I think two is, obviously, AI is going to play, like every industry is going to play, a huge role in risk and compliance and security over the next 5 to 10 years. I really, over the next 2 to 3 years, I would probably say a different tune, because I think we as practitioners are a little risk adverse, right? And we want to see, what we need to have is real strong kind of regulation around AI, so that we know where we can and cannot use it and what are the acceptable uses of that. And until we have that, I think a lot of firms are going to be not hesitant to adopt it, but not adopt it in the most manner that drives veracity within AI across the organization. And last one is, I think, just about the practitioners. I think this is the golden age of risk and compliance, honestly, because I feel like more and more CEO and board level people are truly understanding the value that risk and compliance and security practitioners bring to the table around strategic conversation that truly drive top line business value at the end of the day, right? And I think that will only continue to increase because the risks around us in the world are only increasing, and they're increasing at an exponential rate, right? And if that's happening, we need the practitioners in the compliance and the risk and in the security positions to really have that strategic seat at the table. And I truly believe that we'll have that over the next 5 to 10 years.
Gents, unfortunately, now we are at the end of our time for this episode. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you all if anyone wanted to contact you, get in touch with you, or find out more about LogicGate, what might be the best way or places for them to go?
Yes, logicgate.com is our domain website. You can check us out on LinkedIn. And my email address is matt.kunkel@logicgate.com. Please feel free to reach out and email me. I'd love to talk to you about all things regulatory risk and compliance. Nick?
Likewise. Yeah, mine is nicholas.kathman, K-A-T-H-M-A-N, @logicgate.com. And happy to help and put you in touch with the correct people. We're also at a couple of different conferences, RSA for one. So feel free to stop by and say hi and see demos of the product and really do some deep dives there.
Well, gents, I wanted to thank you both for taking the time to visit with me. I hope we can continue this conversation.
Awesome. Thanks, Tom.
This month, the Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored by Ethico. Are you struggling with budgeting and finance requests for your compliance program? Well, I've written a white paper together with Nick Gallo at Ethico, and we've made that available. So if you'll click through on the link, you can get a white paper on the ROI of compliance and how you can use that in the budgeting process. I know you will be able to use this white paper on ROI. Are you looking for a quick way to get some ideas for an upgrade for your compliance program? Well, I have a new podcast for you, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 5 minutes you can find out a cutting-edge tip of compliance that you can implement or at least consider for your compliance program. Check out the Compliance Tip of the Day each day, Monday through Friday, on the Compliance Podcast Network.